From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 3 weeks into their freshman year at Rutgers, Tyler Clemente asked his roommate, Darun Ravi, to have their room alone for an intimate encounter, it turned out, with another man. Ravi spied via webcam on the two, tweeted about it, urged others to watch. Clemente famously, tragically, killed himself, jumping off New York's towering George Washington Bridge. On Friday, a New Jersey jury delivered a verdict including hate crime charges that could mean 10 years in prison for Ravi. This hour on Point, we're looking at the case and its implications. Let's hear just a little bit of the jury foreman here, finding him guilty on just some of the charges. Here, the first charge and verdict are read out in the courtroom. This was Friday. TC is Tyler Clemente, and MB was his guest in the college dorm room, whose name was not disclosed during the trial. Here's the court clerk and the juror.
On count one, invasion of privacy, we find the defendant guilty or not guilty as to TC.
Guilty.
Guilty or not guilty as to MB.
Guilty.
And on the verdicts went, a lot of them, maybe 10 years facing this young man in prison. His lawyer says he will appeal. Joining me now from Newark, New Jersey, is Kate Zernike, who's been covering the case for the New York Times. Kate, welcome back to the show. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks, Tom, for having me.
So take us to the heart of this. First of all, there were 15 convictions with guilty counts here. And at the heart of it, the hate crime or bias intimidation conviction. What does that mean?
Bias intimidation is the law that is the New Jersey statute referring to hate crimes. And so it's actually an interesting legal point because I've had some readers email me and say, well, we were listening to the verdict on CNN or Court TV, whatever it was, and we heard the jury forewoman say not guilty in some cases. So just to be clear, there were, as you say, 15 charges. Within the bias intimidation and the invasion of privacy charges, there were four or five questions the jury had to consider. And they considered whether Darun Ravi intended to intimidate Tyler, purposely intimidated Tyler, and whether and MB as well, and whether Tyler whether a reasonable person in Tyler's shoes would have felt that he was being targeted because he was gay. So in some of those charges, they said, well, no, we don't think he acted with purposely to intimidate Tyler or MB, but we do think that Tyler would have felt intimidated as any reasonable person would have. Therefore, he's guilty of that, and he's guilty of the whole charge. So there were some. It sounded when we first heard the verdict like, oh, he's not guilty on some charges, but in fact, he was guilty on all 15.
Kate, can you take us back for just a moment, because there was such a kind of a broad simplification of what happened when news of this first came out. Everybody was so shocked after this death was discovered off the George Washington Bridge. What do we know now about what really happened over this spate of a couple of days? Maybe we'll understand the verdicts better if we understand what the jury was told happened.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, again, it's important to understand when this case was first reported, it was sort of believed that there was a YouTube video that had gone out of Tyler and his guest in the room, and that's not the case. So let's, as you say, go back to what happened. Tyler had met this MB on a website for gay men in August, and they decided that they would meet when he got to Rutgers a few weeks later, that they could wait to meet. So they emailed for 3 weeks, finally met on September 16th, which was a Thursday or Friday evening.
So this is just a couple of weeks after Tyler and Darun moved into their new freshman dorm room at Rutgers.
Exactly.
And MB, though not named in this trial, this is a 30-year-old guy I'm now reading.
He was 30 at the time, yes.
Okay, that Tyler had met online. All right.
And Tyler and Darun are both 18. Mm-hmm. So the first evening, it was either a Thursday or Friday, Tyler is in the room with MB. And
he had asked Darun if he would give him the room for the night, right?
I believe that.
He did on
two other occasions. But I think on this first occasion, MB testified that he left early because he knew that the roommate was coming back by 2 in the morning or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of interesting just to be reminded of what it's like to be a college student.
Yeah, no kidding.
So that was, as I said, either Thursday or Friday. On Sunday, Tyler asked Darun if he could have the room.
Again, this is just a couple of days
again,
later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is 2 or 3 nights later. Mm-hmm. And MB comes over and he meets Darun, and Darun is sort of wondering who this 30-year-old guy is, and Darun leaves the room as if to take a shower, and then he goes back in the room to get something, and MB testified he sort of fiddled around on his desk a little bit, right. And then he left the room. And he had set up a webcam, and he went into his friend Molly's room. This is Darun.
This is Molly. Molly Way, who pled out here early. And
she did. She testified for the state, and she pled out. Mm-hmm. So he goes into Molly's room, and they turn the webcam off. He set up the webcam so that he set up his iChat program so that it automatically accepts. So if he tries to get in from Molly's room, his computer will automatically turn on. Okay. The monitor will not turn on. Tyler and MB will not know they're watching.
The camera's on.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So he and Molly turn on the camera briefly. They see two men as they both testify, or actually Darun didn't testify, but he told police investigators. They see Tyler and MB in an embrace, and they sort of freak out the way college students do and shut it off. And so they only see
a glimpse. So
they
didn't watch long, just a glimpse they testified.
They didn't watch long. MB and Tyler testified that they did have sex that night, but they didn't. But what Darun and Molly saw was just them kissing, the initial encounter. Mm-hmm. So that's Sunday night. Tuesday evening, Tyler again asks Darun for the room. What we heard in testimony was that Darun set up the camera, that he, and this was one of the facts that was in dispute. The prosecution said that he had asked a friend to help angle the camera so it would be facing Tyler's bed, so that he had real intent here.
Yeah.
And so he had a friend angle the camera toward Tyler's bed, and then he put out a Twitter message and sent several text messages to people and told people, members of his Ultimate Frisbee team, folks, it's happening again. I've set up the webcam. I dare you to iChat me between the hours of 9 and 11, which was when Tyler had asked for the room.
Because if they did, they would see the image via the webcam.
Exactly. They would see MB and Tyler having sex.
Okay.
So Tyler then is, of course, looking on Darun's Twitter page and sees this and goes and disconnects the camera. He then goes to his resident assistant, complains about this, puts in a request for a room change. Tyler checks the Twitter feed, checks Darun's Twitter feed 38 times in those next couple of days. He's obviously,
upset.
Or from all indications, he's very upset, and he wants to know, he knows that he's been spied on. So he turns off the camera. He goes to his resident assistant. He complains. He asks for a room change. When MB comes over that night, when MB leaves, he turns the camera back on, interestingly enough. So he's sort of got this presence of mind, and he's very, not calculated, but he's thinking through what he's doing. So Darun has no idea that the camera's been turned on and off, but some friend of his says, I tried to turn it on and it didn't work. I got an error message. And Darun says, yes, I've been hearing that from a lot of people.
And then very soon, Tyler's dead.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's Tuesday evening between, I think MB testified he left shortly about midnight. Wednesday, I don't think we know a lot about what Tyler did that morning, but by 8 o'clock that night, first of all, the resident assistant has come to Darun's room to say that Tyler has requested a room change and he believes he's been spied on. And so Tyler takes a train and a bus to the George Washington Bridge, posts a message on his Facebook page saying, jumping off the GW Bridge, sorry. And Darun, about 7 or 8 minutes later, sends him a text message saying, look, I know you found out what happened, and it was just a prank. I didn't mean to upset you. He doesn't even say it was just a prank. He says, I was worried about what was going on in the room, and so, I went into Molly's room, but we didn't see anything. And, of course, I told others because I was concerned about what was happening in the room, but it wasn't intended to do this, and I don't mean to ruin your freshman year by doing this. Mm-hmm. Sends another text message immediately after saying, I've known you were gay. I have no problem with this. I have a really close friend who's gay, and he and I are totally cool with it. But of course, by this time, it's entirely too late.
It's 200 plus feet from the George Washington Bridge to the water below, and Tyler had jumped, and he was presumably dead.
Yeah, yeah.
You write that it took the judge an hour to explain to the jury, to instruct them on the questions they had to answer to reach this hate crime verdict, the bias intimidation verdict. What was the heart of that, that the jury had to figure out in all these facts?
It was so interesting. So again, they had to consider whether Darun had purposely done it separately with regard to Tyler first and then MB second. Then they had to consider whether, and this is sort of sounds like the same thing, whether he intentionally did it. So whether he set out to do this because they were gay. And again, he had to consider whether it was with regards to both of them. Then they had to consider whether someone, a reasonable person in Tyler's shoes, would have felt that he was being targeted because he was gay. They had to consider that. They had to consider all those questions. Whether did he intend to invade his privacy, their privacy? Did he intend to disclose this? Did he intend to disclose this again? And four questions. Did he intend to disclose it regarding Tyler, regarding MB? Would Tyler have, having seen this Twitter feed, would Tyler have felt intimidated? And then, of course, there were four or five charges of tampering with witnesses, because after Darun, after the resident assistant comes to visit Darun and tells him not that Tyler is dead, but that Tyler knows he's been spied on, Darun tries to change some of his Twitter messages and puts out new messages saying, "Don't you dare iChat me." So there were several witness tampering and hindering apprehension
but
charges.
But this bias intimidation is the heart of it, because it would make it a hate crime, and the hate crime verdict would increase very likely the sentence, right?
Yeah, these are known as sentence accelerators. So the invasion, what it does is, invasion of privacy is a 5-year charge, and bias intimidation adds another 5 years on that.
So he's facing potentially 10 years. We won't know until what, the end of May about
May
the 21st.
Sentence? May 21st.
And, but there's, yeah. Does there seem a reasonable chance? Could he get 10 years?
I think there is, because either three or four of these charges are include 5 to 10 year sentences. However, that said, this judge apparently has been known to take some discretion with this and render a non-custodial verdict, which might just mean community service or a sensitivity training.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the hate crime verdict in the case of Tyler Clemente, the gay Rutgers student who jumped from the George Washington Bridge. Whether it was just right, too much, the right charge. In just a moment, we'll hear from get a couple more perspectives on this from Richard Kim and Haley Gorenberg. Here's from just March 7th this month. The jury in the Rutgers trial was presented Darun Ravi's interrogation tape. And in this tape, you can hear the detective questioning Ravi about why he spied on Tyler Clemente.
"You're deliberately lying to us now and telling us that, listen, I wasn't spying on my roommate. I just wanted to watch my valuables. That's not going to work. No. That is an outright lie."
I wanted to find out what was happening in there.
Okay, and what were your suspicions? Were you suspect that he was having a gay relationship?
It was just a weird guy, so I wanted to see.
All right.
He was just a weird guy, so I wanted to see. But you can hear the detective asking, "Were you suspect that he was having a gay relationship?" Pointing at that. Now, this came at a time when there had been a lot of bullying going on. There had been some high-profile cases of young gay men in particular committing suicide. This was President Obama. This was an anti-bullying message released in October, just the following month, in response to the suicide of Tyler Clemente and other gay teens across the country. So it came into this kind of wave of concern about this issue. Here's the president then.
"You are not alone. You didn't do anything wrong. You didn't do anything to deserve being bullied. And there is a whole world waiting for you, filled with possibilities. There are people out there who love you and care about you just the way you are."
It gets better, was the message at that time. And still, hang in there. Kate, a couple more questions here on this. First of all, we read about a deportation possibility here, but Darun Ravi had lived in the United States for a very long time, right? He was 18, but he'd lived here since small child?
I believe he was 6 when he came to this country, yeah, from India.
But he could be imprisoned and or deported, or imprisoned and then deported back to India?
I believe the idea is deported, not put in prison, but deported, but I'm not sure. And again, the prosecutors have said that that's up to immigration officials, and we haven't heard from immigration officials yet.
Okay. His lawyer, you know, tried to raise an argument that's been raised in other cases similar to this, broadly similar, saying, look, he was an 18-year-old boy, a kid. He wasn't biased against his gay roommate, but didn't know how to deal with it. What does this verdict say about that kind of defense? He was a kid.
Well, I think there's a number of ways of looking at it. I mean, I heard from a number of people who have college-age children who said, "I cannot believe that the jury included any parents of college-age kids, because we know what they're like, and they could see their kid doing something."
You mean how they
dumb.
Talk, how kind of
exactly.
Crass and in your face they can be,
right? And you hear kids saying, "Oh, that's so gay," and they're not even referring to anything remotely related to homosexuality. So I think a lot of parents were alarmed at the severity of the charges and could see their kids doing something like this.
On the other hand, if it's your kid who's dead.
Exactly. So I think the trick here is to, as a number of gay rights advocates have pointed out, we need to say it's not enough to say kids will be kids, boys will be boys. We have to say that that's not acceptable anymore. We're not going to dismiss it that way. But on the other hand, is a jail sentence or deportation the best way to enforce that? You know, look at what Molly Wei got. Molly Wei, who was the young woman who viewed the—
across the hall in her room, exactly. Viewed with him.
Yeah, she got community service. She's doing sensitivity training. I mean, is that—if what our goal is, if our goal is to promote understanding of gays and tolerance, is a jail sentence the best way to do that, or do we want to sort of promote understanding in different ways, in more educational ways?
He was offered community service and turned it down. His attorney rolled the dice on this, that he would not be found guilty.
I believe that actually there were two plea offers. I think a lot of this has to be viewed, well, I don't know how much, but I think we have to look at this through cultural, because what his parents, who are Indian immigrants, have said is, you know, this is not, we don't do this. We're not biased people. We're not haters. Therefore, we're not going to take a plea bargain that requires us to admit to bias intimidation, because that wasn't what he was doing. So I think that's why they felt like this would be, a real blot against him to have to admit that as part of the plea. The other thing is, I think, the kids who testified, Daroon's friends, who had come from Plainsboro High School, they weren't sort of kids who really, I think, had, culturally had no experience with homosexuality. If someone perhaps among them is gay, they didn't know about it. They didn't talk about it. They didn't consider it. It just was not part of their world. And so I think when the lawyer was actually not just making some, grand blind stab at a defense, I think it was genuinely true that Daroon had very little experience of this.
Though it's hard to grow up in America in these years and not be fairly familiar with the fact of gay life, gay culture, gay people. Kate, it's so good to have you with us. Please stand by there. I want to bring in a couple of more perspectives here. But first, just to give a sense of the kind of responses we're getting online, here's just a range. Here's Boxer Dave is responding on Twitter to this conversation. And he says, the U.S. has too many homegrown bigots. After his prison sentence, Ravi should be deported. Gay is not to be mocked, humiliated. So there's a tough stance from Boxer Dave. Here's another this is from our website. Old man says, what Ravi did was wrong. That said, I'm not sure holding him responsible for Clemente's death is appropriate. Now, legally, he's not been held responsible for that. But anyway, he goes on to say, how far does this go? Shall we hold everyone who's contributed to someone's decision to commit suicide as criminally accountable? And then here's Caesar in Pittsburgh says, I'm a gay man and an LGBT activist, yet I disagree with his verdict. What sane person would commit suicide over a video of them kissing somebody? Clearly, Tyler Clemente had some other issues going on, our listener writes. Mr. Ravi's actions were out of order. I think expulsion from the school along with community service would have been sufficient punishment. A whole range of responses to the verdict on Friday. Kate Zernike in Newark, New Jersey. Please stand by there if you would. Joining us right now from New York is Richard Kim. He's executive editor at The Nation magazine. He's been following the Tyler Clemente case. Richard Kim, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And with us from New York is Haley Gorenberg, Deputy Legal Director for Lambda Legal, a legal organization whose mission is to protect the civil rights of lesbians, gay men, bisexuals, transgendered people. Haley Gorenberg, thank you very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Good to be here.
Haley, let me come first to you. I mean, this is kind of your job, to protect this community. Now you've got a hate crime verdict in the case of Daroon Ravi. Does it look right to you?
I think based on the law in New Jersey, and I don't second-guess these jurors who heard days of testimony and examined all the evidence, they have come to a conclusion. And I think that it makes a lot of sense for us to be focusing our attention actually on what the environment is that leads to the question about, was this valid? Because we've been so blind to discrimination against LGBT people that we find ourselves, it seems, collectively surprised that there was a sound verdict on the evidence. And that should lead us to more questions about what we can do to create better understanding to actually prevent these situations in the future. This was just one instance of thousands and thousands that we know are happening all the time.
I don't know if it's surprise or people just focusing in a case where we know more details than we usually might, trying to think this through, and particularly in a time when, as you say, there's still lots of discrimination. We've seen those problems. We've seen the campaigns trying to push back against it. At the same time, cultural mores around this are changing. The polls all show over time. There's also a wave of acceptance out there, sort of mixed. It's an interesting time. Richard Kim, you're at The Nation magazine. You're openly gay. You've been following this, and you've expressed some misgivings about the hate crime path here. What are you thinking after the verdicts on Friday?
Well, I first want to say, Tom, that I am gay, and I grew up in New Jersey, and I play the violin like Tyler Clemente. And so when I heard that he had committed suicide, it was a deeply painful moment for me.
And, absolutely.
And, And I have great sympathy and compassion for all gay teenagers who are going through tough times. And I think we absolutely need to do more as a society to help support them and to also make anti-gay bullying not acceptable. I do think, however, that in this instance, the sentencing, the potential sentencing, is disproportionate to the invasion of privacy. I don't think also that hate crimes legislation is the best way to go about addressing this sort of real problem. And I think to focus energy on education, education that Darren Ravi might have received when he got to Rutgers or in high school, and to talk about how to engage people who are different from you is a better way to go rather than the criminal justice system when it is really too late to make an intervention.
But the criminal justice system speaks very loudly. I mean, this message is coming out loud and clear, you know, that there's just because you're sort of young and it's not enough to say, yeah, it was jerky, I shouldn't have done it. I mean, this puts a big, serious punctuation on this case that surely a lot of people will hear.
It does speak loudly, but so does, for example, Barack Obama, the president of the United States, who believes that gay and lesbians are not equal citizens when it comes to marriage. And so does Rick Santorum, the Republican presidential possible candidate who has compared gay sex to bestiality. So society is sending from the highest levels very mixed messages to teenagers, gay and straight. And if you look at the record of Tyler and Darren Ravi's tweets and messages to their friends, you know, it's really clear that they were trying to work out a lot of differences on the basis of race, class, and sexual orientation. And it's really a shame that that process hasn't been allowed to go forward. And I think at the end of that, you might have seen a very different person emerge than the Darren Ravi who is now facing 10 years in prison.
But of course, the process can't go forward for Tyler Clemente because he's dead.
And that is an absolute tragedy, and I don't want to belittle that in any way. And there are far too many gay and lesbian teenagers whose lives are made really intolerable by anti-gay bullying. It's not clear in this instance that Tyler Clemente was one of them, and I think his suicide remains a deep mystery. He had an openly gay brother who he was very close to, relatively accepting parents. He wasn't
who
bullied
across
campus.
He had recently come out to.
Exactly. And in fact, you know, Ravi and Clemente had exchanged messages with their friends, and some of those were actually quite nice. Ravi had texted that about Clemente, he's mad nice and mad quiet. And Clemente had texted about Ravi that he's very considerate and perceptive. So there was tension, and there was also clearly some sort of groping to some kind of bearable and durable relationship between these two roommates that were thrown into this room together. And, you know, I think, you know, it's really important to focus our attention on what else could have been done in those very tender and early moments to have had a better outcome in this situation.
Haley Gornberg with Lambda Legal, what about sensitivity training, education, community service instead of prison time?
I'm all for education at the earliest levels and continuing way before young people get to college, well before they are legal adults at 18. So that should be happening, and more of it should be happening, and we should embrace it all because it does us all a lot of good and it does our kids a lot of good. That said, I do think it's important to keep in mind a couple of key facts as people look at this verdict and ask what it all means. There were choices to be had here, including the choice that the person who was prosecuted had to take a deal that would have involved lesser consequences than he's facing now. And he made a choice to do otherwise. So if people are finding what his companion Molly Way is now doing in terms of community service and her record to be more palatable, he had the choice to do the same thing. It is also the case that while certainly Tyler Clemente's suicide has focused people on the outcome of this case, that Mr. Ravi was not charged with the suicide at all. So we should keep that
right
in mind. And obviously some of your commenters who've emailed you have not had that made clear or clear enough for them.
Well, though, if I may, Kate Zernike, I mean, the fact of the death seems to have played a role in the severity of the charges that were brought here, Kate.
Absolutely. I mean, the prosecutor said we would have brought, you know, he was asked on Friday, would you have brought this case if Tyler Clemente had not committed suicide? And he said, absolutely, under these facts, with this evidence, I would have prosecuted this. But what was interesting was if you looked again at what I talked about, these questions that the jury had, they had to consider whether Darun had intimidated Tyler and whether he had intimidated MB. They had seen MB in court. They had had a chance to sort of size him up and look at his reactions. They decided that he that Darun had not intimidated him, had not set out after him because he was gay, had not invaded his privacy. All they knew of Tyler really was that he committed suicide, and they found that Tyler would have felt intimidated. So it's hard to believe that the jury didn't somehow have it in their minds that Tyler had – all they knew of Tyler was that he had killed himself and that they had his death very much in mind. The other thing I think it's important to point out is that the jury – when the jury goes into that room, they're not thinking, you know, gee, this kid might get 10 years. They're just considering, is he guilty? Based on the facts, do we think he's guilty? They're actually not looking at the punishment. So the jury, we sort of can't think that the jury is the one that decided that he should go to jail for 10 years if, in fact, that's what he does.
They go with no idea that this verdict would mean a heavier sentence for the accused?
They have an idea that that's either a second degree or fourth degree charge, but they don't have. I don't think they're
a number necessarily.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to go to our listeners. A lot of them want to join us here. Kate, Richard, Kim, Haley, Gorenberg, please stand by. Joseph in Stamford, Connecticut. Joseph, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Some of your guests have already alluded to this question.
Okay.
Hate crimes usually have a victim who can testify, yes, there were homophobic slurs, I felt intimidated. Unfortunately, Tyler is dead.
Right.
Now, my question is this, was there evidence during the trial in which specifically pointed out that said that he felt like he was intimidated? And, or is this a case where the prosecutor is, I got a dead body here, anyone in this situation would feel intimidated? And that's my question.
And how are you coming at this, Joseph? Just give us this. Are you sympathetic to Tyler here, or are you sympathetic with Darun?
I'm very sympathetic to him because, first of all, I am a gay man also. But it seems like one of your guests also alluded to, that there was more than just this invasion of privacy issue. He had others. Maybe he was suicidal already. But like I said, he was definitely guilty of invasion of privacy. If he was guilty of a hate crime, does the evidence show that Tyler stated in his tweets, or went on in?
Joseph, let us pick that up. And Kate, I'll come to you with that, and then to Richard and Haley. But first, we just got a minute here before the break. What about the evidence? Tyler couldn't speak for himself. He was dead. What about the evidence? You cited a little bit, but what else can you tell us?
So what we know, again, is that he went to his resident assistant and complained about this and wrote an email to the resident assistant backing it up, saying, this is completely outrageous behavior. I don't want to live with someone who would behave in such an I forget his exact language, but it was something like completely outrageous and unacceptable.
Did he say that he was doing this to me because I'm gay? Not that he'd have to, but...
I don't know. I think it was made clear in the email. The jury mm-hmm. only had that last line, though, that he had behaved in this completely unacceptable way. Mm-hmm. I think it was obvious to all that he had viewed on a gay encounter. He, again, checked the Twitter feed 38 times in the 24, 48 hours before he died. So he was clearly very aware. He was clearly, thinking about this a lot, if not sort of perseverating on it in the hours before he died.
And, of course, this is a Twitter feed where, among other things, Darun Ravi was saying, roommates kissing a dude. Kate Zernike, please stand by with the New York Times. Been covering all of this. Richard Kim with The Nation magazine joining us from New York. And Haley Gorenberg, Deputy Legal Director for Lambda Legal. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the hate crime verdict just came out Friday in the case of Tyler Clemente, the gay Rutgers student who jumped from the George Washington Bridge to his death, suicide. We're asking whether the verdict was just right or too much, the right charge. Richard, Kate, Haley, let me share a couple more. Lots of response here. KJ writes, I was subjected to this kind of intimidation in the 80s when I was in college. I can empathize with Tyler's pain and desperation. At first blush, I wanted Darun's head. But as your reporter laid out the facts, I'm not sure Darun's intent was criminal. Stupid, yes, but criminal, I don't know. Christopher writes, as a gay man, I have to say that if I was videotaped at that age, I would feel intimidated. I am, however, he writes, hesitant to say this is a hate crime, and goes on. I mean, people are really, Haley, people are really sort of struggling with this one. 10 years seems like a long time. We don't know what it will be, But then you're looking right across the country at a pattern of intimidation and gay young people driven to desperation. And I guess in this verdict, you find an important message across for the whole country.
Yes, I think we're finally shining light on something that has been taking a great toll on our young people, a great toll on their lives, including perhaps connecting to many suicides. The Journal of the American Medical Association was looking at this and collecting studies that had already been in existence back in the late 90s. So the questions of connection to youth suicide of LGBT people, it makes sense to be asking the questions. As a matter of sort of looking at hate crime laws and thinking about what kind of conduct fits into criminal activity and how we're going to look at that, I think I would analogize to the cultural shift and sort of mental shift that we had to have when we looked at acquaintance rape, that for a long time rape wasn't understood as a crime when people knew each other or perhaps even in marriage. And we needed to justifiably recalibrate our idea of and our understanding of what the crime was there, and to understand that it didn't always look like we expected it to, you know, on a TV show or in a movie or, you know, or some kind of a horror show or right. something like that. And so we're recalibrating here, too, to understand that intimidation bias crimes can look a bit different, and we better get ourselves educated about that because it takes a huge toll.
Does that change as society becomes more accepting? Now, you point out very rightly that there's still a lot of rejection and a lot of, there can be plenty of intimidation, but we also see changes in gay marriage laws and in attitudes if the polls are right. I mean, there was some indication that Taylor Clemente himself, you know, lived in a younger generation where attitudes might be different. There's so much record because of text and all kinds of digital messages here. And testimony. I mean, Clemente said that himself, while he was still alive, that it would be so awkward if Ravi walked in. I'm changing the quote a little bit just for I can't say all this on the air, but you know, while he was having sex. But at the same time, he said, at the same time, I would just be like, screw it. I mean, it indicating that he himself, at least in that particular statement, might not have found it the end of the world.
So I can't second guess the jurors. They're the ones who were in there deliberating, and they came to a clear conclusion on all the counts that the bias intimidation charges were indeed warranted, and they deliberated, and that's the conclusion they reached. In terms of sort of the overall, what's the impact of hate crimes or bias crimes, the Supreme Court looked at this in the 90s in Wisconsin versus Mitchell, and they talked about this second penalty for hate crimes. There's always an underlying crime that's been charged, in this case, the invasion of privacy. And then when a hate crime is layered on top in mm-hmm. our law, federally or state, the Supreme Court said, you know, there is a greater – the government can find that there is a greater chance of retaliation, of community unrest, of special emotional impact on people's lives and community impact, not just on the individual, when people are targeted based on specific traits, individual traits. And those traits that our FBI hate crime statistics show us are most commonly the traits for which people are targeted are their race, their religion, and their sexual orientation. Those are the top three in the numbers right. of people's personal traits that get them targeted for crime. And the jury looked at it here and right. found that to be the case.
Yeah, though it's usually layered on top of something, you know, like murder, something more serious than invasion, usually something violent. Richard?
Yeah, so that's you know, when hate crimes bills passed, and when particularly when sexual orientation was added to hate crimes legislation in the wake of Matthew Shepard's murder, mm-hmm. that was a scenario that everyone was talking about, a violent crime like murder or assault, or an instance where the perpetrator of the crime was an active agent of hate, that they were you know, really involved, let's say, in anti-gay groups, or had particularly made it a goal of his or hers to harass and intimidate gay people. And that is not what happened in this scenario. So, and I don't think anyone is alleging that. So, you know, yes, the law was written loosely enough, but the prosecutor could have applied the bias intimidation charge to this. Should he have? I don't think so. And I think the better way to address situations like this is through education and not through the pursuit of a hate crimes charge. I think 10 years is and this boy's life in jail for 10 years and possible deportation is not the right way to send a message on this.
Let's go to Omaha, Nebraska. Victoria's calling. Victoria, thanks. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I was calling to speak a little bit toward the hate crime legislation piece of this. I identify as lesbian, and I don't tend to agree with hate crime legislation for the same reasons that the gentleman in New York has been speaking in terms of the accelerated punishments. And in this case in particular, I also agree with him that I think that it's totally disproportionate to the crime that Ravi committed. I believe he was just spying. And I know that while a lot of people are disputing whether or not this was just juvenile hijinks, that's the way I kind of view it. At 18 and 19 years old, I don't know that people are extremely comfortable with their sexuality. So Robbie's curiosity in terms of turning on the webcam and spying was highly inappropriate, but I don't see those actions as hateful. And I think to punish him with such severity is just going to create more problems. And it also leaves the door open for other instances where people are going to be punished disproportionately for things like anti-bias crimes.
Victoria, I appreciate your call. Kate, what kind of reception is this getting if you've been looking more widely than the courtroom there in New Jersey and beyond? I mean, on the one hand, people really obviously care about young people and older people who are intimidated. And in Clemente's case, he's dead and he's not the first. On the other hand, this idea of policing thought and what someone actually thought when they did something is tough. What's the I'm looking in the Star Ledger. This is in New Jersey, an editorial saying, you know, the biggest crime in this trial is overkill. What are you hearing, Kate, in reaction to this verdict?
Well, it's interesting. I've heard reactions from, and this is sort of people in New Jersey, but gay friends who've said, you know, they're older, but they're saying, geez, if I was in college and I had a gay roommate, I would have told all my friends too, hey, my roommate's gay. So that's one thing. And then I've heard from heterosexual friends who've said, my God, if someone viewed me having sex my freshman year of college and put it, you know, and told other people that I would have died. You know, I would have wanted to commit suicide. So I think they're very personal. I mean, look, this is an intimate act that we're talking about. And if they're very personal, intimate feelings, and everyone sort of has some, you know, they can put themselves in that position of just having arrived at college from either, you know, either you're a dumb sort of insensitive 18-year-old kid, or you're, you know, or you're someone whose privacy has been violated and you feel really upset about it. I do think there are people who are saying, you know, 10 years is too much. And that, again, this is not the way that we want to promote sensitivity. On the other hand, what do you do? There has to be some. There is no interim. It's not as though the law sets up some interim punishment here. And so I think gay rights advocates are rightly saying we have to stop saying kids will be kids. He's just a dumb kid, because otherwise we'll never stop people from doing this.
Boy, when you Richard Kim, the kind of talk that people, especially young people, quite casually do online, which can be very sardonic, it can be very over the top. I mean, the web has been seen, the digital realm, as a realm where you can sort of say anything. And this would seem to put a kind of a chill on that.
Well, it's unclear that this prosecution or any hate crimes prosecution actually has any kind of deterrent effect, and that 18-year-olds across the country or in New Jersey are paying attention to this, or 18-year-olds 3 months from now will even know that this happened. So I'm not certain it will have an effect on that environment. I do think that on both sides, there were a lot of texts and messages that went around that showed both of these boys really sort of working in a teenage vernacular, the sort of id of our consciousness. Clemente, for example, you know, wrote about how his roommate was so first-generation Indian American and that his parents probably owned a Dunkin' Donuts. You could imagine another scenario where if things had been a little different, Tyler Clemente would be the one being prosecuted for hate bias crimes on the basis of race. So, you know, this is why I think the application of these in these circumstances is inappropriate. And I also think, you know, I'm enough a civil libertarian to think that you punish the crime and not the thought.
Let's go to Carol in Omaha, Nebraska. Carol, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, actually what your last speaker just said really ties in with to what I was going to say. And that's basically, one of your guests has said that that the reason you go after people of hate crimes are targeted for race, religious, and sexual orientation. And the same thing happens, I believe, in terms of prosecution of criminals, race, religion, maybe not so much sexual orientation. Now, I'm an attorney here in Omaha, Nebraska. I do family law.
Mm-hmm.
If Robbie had not been Indian, especially this first generation Indian, would he have been targeted so vehemently for prosecution? Because I didn't hear any evidence whatsoever that he had been, you know, some neo-Nazi, a history of bias, that there had been this, you know, ongoing bias that he had demonstrated, nothing at all. He didn't have that kind of pattern. So did he have the intent for it to really be a hate crime? And I don't think that it shows that he did.
Carol, let us pick it up there. Our time grows short. Kate Zernike, what's the conversation around this? First generation Indian American?
Yeah. Well, I haven't heard any discussion about whether he's been prosecuted because he was an Indian. And frankly, I think that had he been, you know, a white kid whose parents had been in New Jersey and grandparents had been born here, I think the prosecution would have been the same. But again, the jury did not say that he intended or purposefully intimidated Tyler. What they said was Tyler, in his position, would have felt intimidated, that there was cause for someone to feel that they had been targeted because he was gay. So, again, it's not necessarily that they looked and said, well, Darun was a hater. And again, as the caller is correct, there was no evidence that Darun is a hater or had been expressing these thoughts over and over and over again.
Well, but
sorry,
there has to be evidence that there was some. I mean, it's a hate crime, so bias, intimidation means that
right.
the jury
right. But
concluded
what I'm
there
sorry,
was evidence.
I should be clear. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is, there's no evidence that he was sort of a, you know, that, as your caller said, that he's a neo-Nazi or that he had a long pattern of saying sort of aggressively mean or intimidating things against gays.
A lot of what we read does seem kind of in the vernacular of people that age. On the other hand, Here's a particular circumstance and a jury that looked closely, and here's their finding. Joshua in Boston. Joshua, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just think it's a terrible case, and I think they ought to get Alan Dershowitz a silver plate down there. It's very Orwellian. He had no hate, this kid, that is getting prosecuted. And, you know, kids do this all the time. I mean, we live in the age of sex, lies, and videotape. Everything's on YouTube. Everything's tweeted. Everything. I mean, if it was a... people having group sex and one of the individuals went out and they were straight and jumped off the bridge. I mean, if the kid was out and his parents accepted him, I don't think this would have happened. I think railroading this kid, Ravi, is going to backfire.
Joshua, we've got it. I mean, he out, but only barely out. And everybody plunged into a new college setting here. And here we go. I appreciate your call. Aaron in Beverly, Massachusetts. Aaron, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I'll be brief. I know I'm one of the last callers.
Mm-hmm.
Back when I was in college, I did have a gay roommate, and I was raised in a home where I was never exposed to that, so I really felt awkward. But I was raised to have respectful conversations, and, you know, I just confronted him. I was like, hey, look, you know, this is something I'm not comfortable with. And we had a really good – we kind of, like, built our friendship from that. It was much more a better situation than setting up a webcam and taking the cowardly route out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So how do you feel about the verdict, Aaron, with that particular experience?
I don't know. I feel it was just, it's immature. I feel like I don't know. I'm undecided, honestly, about the actual verdict. But, you know, Ravi is what just took a cowardly way out. I don't know. That's my opinion.
A real conversation would have been better. No question about that. Richard Kim, where do you see the law evolving here? Do you think we're sitting in the right place on hate crime legislation in states around the country? Is this evidence that we've got it about right or not?
I don't think actually we have it about right, and I think you know that there's the law has been overly broad and sweeps into circumstances where it's not an appropriate tool. And there's also is an intense media firestorm around this incident and a lot of misreporting about it when it first came out. Mm-hmm. That a sex scene had been broadcast online, that Tyler Clementi was closeted and this had outed him. None of those things are actually true. They only viewed a very few seconds of mm-hmm. him kissing another man. So there was a lot of community pressure from gay rights advocates for the prosecutor to pursue this. And I think, again, here, this is a situation where the case has been meant to stand in for a much broader social anxiety that absolutely I think we should do something about, but not through these means.
Haley Gorenberg, the law too loose? Could you see tightening it and still having the impact that you're looking for in protecting vulnerable people?
What I would look for is that as we ask these questions, we make sure to ask a companion question about whether we are having this reaction because this is a notable case where somebody was prosecuted after abusive behavior towards someone based on their sexual orientation, and whether the firestorm around and reaction to this comes from an overall lack of understanding of the discrimination that LGBT people face, because that discrimination is often entirely invisible, and this case makes it extremely visible. I would also say there's been a lot of mention, as we've talked about, the 10-year consequence, potentially 10 mm-hmm. years. Mm-hmm. My 10-year-old has known for years now how to say, hey, that's not okay. Mm-hmm. And all of our kids need to know at very young ages to speak up when they see something like this happening and say, not okay, stop it.
Well, here we are. Tyler Clemente dead. Darun Ravi in a lot of trouble. I think Aaron's got it right. Respect and conversation have got to be better ways here. But it's really an interesting case on where our society stands around this issue, and illuminated by this particular case. Kate Zernike with the New York Times, thank you so much for your coverage and your time with us today, Kate. It's been great. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
Richard Kim at The Nation, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Tom.
And Haley Gornberg with Lambda Legal. Thank you, Haley. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.